My tummy hurts. Welcome back to Gumshoe Weekly.
We didn't say our names in the last episode.
Oh shit, we did it. I feel like if you're coming to fucking, you know who the fuck this is. Like, you're not expecting Angelina Jolie and J-Lo. Like,
oh my god, I can be J-Lo, starts with a J. Everyone's wearing makeup again.
Welcome back to Gumshoe Weekly.
The epicenter for murder, mystery, and anonymity. Because we didn't tell you our names in the last episode. We're so sorry.
I'm your host, Brianna.
I'm your host, June, comma, Mama June.
Oh. You're going to say June, comma, Low. As June Low, instead of J-Lo.
June Lou. It's Jude Law, but different.
I'm Judy Law.
I'm Judy Law. Wow, is that a character now that we have? Okay.
I don't have a question. I did not look at it.
Oh, yeah. And I fucking flipped off the page that had all the questions. I have two. So. Okay. So, if you were required by law to get a full body tattoo, what would you get?
If I was required by law to get a full body tattoo.
What would you get?
Like, face and everything?
Up to you.
I would probably do something like a comic book one. Because that's what I want anyway. Just the full comic book one.
Like, comic panels over your body?
No, like, all the characters.
Ever. In together. A compact. In any comic. Why can't I say
I
it?
Don't know.
Comic book.
No, just my favorite ones.
Would you get saga characters?
Yes, for
That'd
sure.
That'd be fucking sick.
That would be sick.
You gotta get Goose.
Goose. Did you ever read Crowded? Mm-hmm. Oh, no, you didn't. It's so fucking good. I got somebody at work to get into it, and it's so good. I told you it's the assassin, and...
Oh, yeah.
So gay. I love
so
it.
So gay. We love how gay it is. speaking of comic books... I think in the JFK episode, you mentioned that there's a comic book.
The Department of Truth.
Yeah, and the Lee Harvey Oswald is, what's his name?
Lee Harvey.
Leroy
No,
Jenkins?
Harvey Lee Oswald.
Harvey Lee Oswald. At least I didn't say Henry this time.
No.
So.
I think you say a different H name every time.
I think so. So he is the head of the thing in that. Anyways. Mm-hmm. I watched Longshot the other day with Seth Rogen and Charlize Theron, and at the very end of the movie, when everything is happy, spoiler, when they're married and she's the president.
Oh yeah, that was a good movie.
That was such a good movie. I watched it over the course of 3 days.
Oh my god.
I was very sick. Anyway, so, he goes, they're getting interviewed by the press, and they're like, what's, you know, one of the greatest things since you became president? He's like, I got to find out who really killed JFK. And then she's like, don't even do it. I'm not joking. Do not. And he's like, it's not who you think it is. That's all I could. I was just like, oh my god, what cosmic timing that this came up right after we did the episode.
Did you ever see how that recently came out about Obama? He was on...
He killed JFK?
No.
Who knew it?
He was on James, what's that guy's name? James something.
Corden.
He was on his show, and he was like, what was the best thing you ever did about, you know, being a president? Can you tell us anything? He goes, aliens.
And that's all he said?
He's like, I can't say anything else on screen.
So do you think he said something to James Corden off screen?
Probably.
Oh my god.
Yeah, it was him interviewing him on, like, a Zoom call or some shit. And he said, aliens. He was like, I can't say anything on recording.
Well, you think he knows about all those secret citizens that you were talking about? That are aliens? He must. He probably has met most of them.
Yeah. He's probably one of them. Lizard people, you know.
Yeah. Anyways, I think I would get creepy tattoos.
Creepy?
I think I would just get a bunch of tattoos that I really wanted. But yeah. One of the ones I want, the biggest one I want, is creepy. So, because it's a Wendigo.
Yeah.
So, but I don't know. It depends, though, because it's like, does it have to all be matching? Does it all have to be one That's big what I thing? Mean. Do you need to get somebody else's body tattooed over yours?
Oh, man. Because body, so I got a six pack in my little gut.
And a penis. On your vagina. I don't like that.
I want a big one, so.
It's on the side of your thigh. It's on my thigh. You can't wear shorts.
Wait, no, forget it. I take it back.
Or a skirt. They'd be like, what am I?
Ma'am, your penis.
Ma'am, your penis. Your penis.
I'm like, oh, out. It's just a tattoo.
It's a tattoo. It's still a penis. Please get it out of my face. If I was like, if it had to be like one thing, because I feel like I could come up with enough.
Yeah.
Or like source it out to someone and be like, I want some sick ass shit that looks cool and also matches each other.
Yeah.
But like it needs to be balanced. But I think if it all had to be one thing, I think I want it all to be like words. See, have you ever seen those really cool movies where they have, like, really sick word tattoos, or it'll be, like, spiraling around their arms, or, like, up and down? That kind of shit? I would do that. Or if it was, like, I don't know, like, maybe like it's just a lot of cryptid monsters. I'll just get those all over my body. Or I just get snakes. A lot of them.
That's, like, that show that came out about the girl who was, she went missing, or she was an agent, she went missing, and she came back. Her whole body was just a clue.
Blindside.
Yeah.
Is it Blindside?
No. I don't know.
It's blind.
It's bones. Spot.
It's bones.
It's bones. It's Rizzoli and Isles.
It's Rizzoli and Isles. You would know if you're Die Hard.
It's CSI Miami, actually.
It's Saving Grace. Actually, in Saving Grace, she does get abducted by a serial killer who tattoos big-ass angel wings on her back. And he's like, you're an angel. The thing is that the premise of Saving Grace is that she does have a guardian angel. So then the guy throws her out of a window on the top of a building, but her shirt is ripped open because he just tattooed fucking angel wings on her. The point is she's falling down from the the building, like 12 stories at least, lands in some bushes and lives, but it's because her guardian angel, like, grabbed her, but because the cops were outside of the building, they saw it all, and they were like, that's fucking bullshit. And then they're just like, because the imagery of it was just her with angel wings on her back falling from this thing, landing in bushes and living. And they're just like, so then, you know, that gets even more unwanted media attention. But yeah. I just think that's the kind of thing that it reminds me of, is like, if you get a tattoo against your will.
So he was a tattoo artist?
The serial killer?
That's the only thing I got stuck on.
Yeah. Or he did fucking pick and poke, or whatever they call it. Which is fucked up.
Yeah.
Also, you know what? I would maybe want it to be, like, a bunch of, like, symbols. So then it looks... So I would just be like, so I get reincarnated. Don't worry about it. Each
you know
one,
what you're putting on your body, then?
Huh?
What if it's, like, you know how people...
I would know what it is. I would research it. I wouldn't just be like, this is Chinese for hope. And they're like, it says dog shit.
It says, you're a slut bag.
No, I would do, like, research, but that's, like, what I would do.
Ah, okay, fair enough.
Claire, it's, like, a bunch of weird religious symbols.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Huh.
Or occult symbols. No.
Or occult symbols.
I don't want the devil. That's good occult.
Good occult.
There's good occult. Witches. No, they don't call them white witches. They call them light witches. Because then you have to say that bad witches are black witches, which is why I don't call it white witches anymore.
Oh, that's not okay.
They call it dark witches and light witches.
Okay. Slap hands.
Rock, paper, scissors, shoot. Scissor.
Paper.
Rock, paper, scissors, shoot. Scissor. Rock, paper, scissors, shoot.
Rock.
Paper, scissors, shoot, rock.
Paper.
What was the first one? I did scissor.
I did paper?
Okay, we have to go again.
Fuck.
Rock, paper, scissors, shoot, rock.
Paper.
Okay, you win.
I'll go first.
No, I don't
figure
care.
I always make you go first. Alrighty. Have you ever heard of the Black Widows?
Yes, she's a Marvel character.
Did you see that movie?
No.
I saw it. It was pretty good.
Oh, good.
I actually liked it for, like, what it was. Mm-hmm. Her being not a main character and then just needing to fill the status quo of a woman movie.
The prequel to it, so yeah. They could replace her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Alonzo said they're fixing to do, like, a young Avengers after all the old Avengers. So.
Oh, okay.
Did you see the movie Midsommar?
No.
It was terrible. Don't watch it. Everybody says it's so good. It's so bad. That girl in that movie. You ever saw the movie cover, though, right?
Mm-mm.
It's the girl crying and she has the crown, the flower crown on. If you've seen it, you know what I was talking about. Trust me. She is in that movie and she plays her sister, her younger sister. Mm-hmm. The story is really interesting. Like, her backstory is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
So, that was interesting to see. Anyway, but no, not that Black Widow.
Okay.
Spoilers for Black Widow. Sorry, everybody. Okay. Our story begins
mm-hmm.
on June 22nd, 2005. A Wednesday night, a car parked in an alley off West Boulevard in West Los Angeles shortly after midnight. Someone gets out of the car and pulls out a man, clearly very drunk, and lays him down. They get back in the car and then slowly, very, very slowly, proceed to back up the car and deliberately run over the man.
This is not where I saw this going.
No. The car took off and left the man to die.
Yeah.
Yeah. As one does.
As you do.
I like how you always put the blanket on like a towel.
Yeah.
Like a weird little toga towel.
Need my legs to be warm.
The man would be identified as 50-year-old Kenneth McDavid, a homeless man from Northern California. Police were able to identify a silver 1999 Mercury Sable station wagon on surveillance as the cause of death, or the weapon of death.
Okay.
His autopsy would show a blood alcohol count of 0.08 combined with prescription painkillers and sleeping pills. He suffered from a flattened chest with 3 broken ribs, a fractured spine, and abrasions consistent with being dragged several feet. The person who ran him over made it so deliberate that when running him over, they did it so slow that his glasses remained on his face with grease splatter marks on them.
What the fuck?
On the lens. And he had imprints on his pants.
From the tire?
From the tire. That means they pressed so hard in. Not tracks or, like, you know, when you, like...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Imprints. So that was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
With no witnesses and him being homeless, the case went cold and just became another tragic hit and run for about 7 months.
Did anyone see this?
No witnesses came forward. So no. Huh. One morning, the investigation, they did catch the car on
CCTV?
Yeah. One morning, the investigating officer was talking with another officer when mention of 2 women coming in looking for the police report of a transient hit and run, which was off and odd because there was no relation between them and the person they were asking for.
Mm-hmm.
This sparked something in another detective who had a case exactly like that 6 years earlier.
Oh, shit.
The detective told them of a case from November 8th, 1999, in the early hours. An elderly man was found in an alley in West Hollywood. Someone had run him over and left him there. And he was also homeless with no ID. And that case also went cold. Nobody had come forward, but he was eventually identified as 73-year-old Paul Vados. The two detectives compared notes on the case, and the same 2 women claimed both Vados and McDavid. Kenneth McDavid was the first man. They couldn't find any proof of them being related to the men. I have a screenshot. It says...
This is wildly familiar to me, and I'm getting worried that you did this story already.
No, I didn't do this one.
Okay. Why do I know about it, then?
It's pretty popular, I want to say.
Okay.
They couldn't find any proof of them being related to the men. The LAPD detective Dennis Kilcoyne later told the Los Angeles Times, it was somewhat unusual that two elderly ladies unrelated to the victims were coming in and making requests for police reports, attempting to gain custody of the body, and claiming there was no one else in the world who cared about their poor soul. The police identified the women eventually as 73-year-old Olga Ruttenschmidt and 75-year-old Helen Goulet from Hollywood and Santa Monica and longtime friends. So, I don't know what I wrote there.
I was going to say, you can turn on the ring light if you need more light.
So, what do we know? See, I try to add in my ad-libs here.
Yeah.
So, how do these women know the two transient men?
Yes.
After police did some digging, it was discovered that more than a dozen life insurance policies were taken out on the men, and after their deaths, claims were filed worth more than $4 million. And so far, insurance companies had already shelled out $2.2 million.
How do they not realize, as insurance companies, that there's multiple on one person?
So, when insurance companies started to suspect foul play and refused to pay them, the women promptly began legal proceedings to collect their money. However, the problem soon showed that while, yes, plenty of motive, the problem would be finding the proof as to why they were killing them. So, who are these women exactly? Well, let's take a look. Olga Ruttenschmidt was born in Hungary in 1933. She immigrated to the U.S. in 1957. She owned a coffee shop in L.A. with her then-husband before they divorced, and she moved to Hollywood in the 1970s. Helen Goulet was born in Texas in 1931. She was a real estate broker of three properties, and she herself lived in a $1.5 million home.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go off, queen, I guess.
It's unclear exactly when the two met, but were friends for very many years. Both were unmarried and really seemed to enjoy going out, getting super dressed up, and hanging out where there were a lot of men.
Are we sure they're not lesbians? But.
In churches, in like beach clubs and stuff like that. Like, think old women and think like rich women. Mm-hmm. A lot of like trying to be socialites kind of thing. It seems the pair were going out, gaining the trust of transient men, set them up for like good living, would give them like benefits and stuff like that. They would put them in low rental homes, and basically kind of take care of them, giving them advice and having them help them with errands and stuff like that. In exchange, the men signed life insurances naming the pair as beneficiaries. This was odd. After 2 years of these agreements, both men died. So, under California law, this is that question you were asking earlier. Under California law, it makes it difficult for insurance companies to contest the benefits, basically after 2 years.
Oy, oy, oy.
In both men's cases, the pairs were next of kin, as they didn't really have family, and they had already signed these women on their shit.
Mm-hmm.
However, when Paul Vado's estranged daughter learned of his death, she began to a super long uphill battle to move her father to a family plot and basically collect some of the life insurance benefits. So, police start watching the women during their daily routines, staking them out. All's normal until one investigator observes another possible victim when Ruttenschmidt is seen pulling over and begins talking to an elderly man who is out walking. The man gets into the car, they drive to a bank, and inside the pair talk to a teller, and then leave. Once outside, Ruttenschmidt throws some papers into the trash, which are... Why am I fucking stumbling so hard? Rudderschmidt threw papers into the trash, which were retrieved by detectives. They were returned envelopes. They were return envelopes to a life insurance policy company and a bank. So after she was followed to, she was then followed to a copy place where she logged into the internet, onto the internet, and was attempting to open a credit card in another man's name. Was this man their next victim? Probably. Mm-hmm. While they didn't have very much to move forward on the murder investigation just yet, they did have enough for mail fraud charges in connection with the life insurance policies.
Aha.
Yep. On May 19, 2006, the dynamic duo were charged with 8 counts of mail fraud. It wasn't long before media caught wind of the two and started referring to the pair as the Hit and Run Grannies or the Black Widows. While detectives were still working the case, they searched their homes and found more than 8 rubber stamps of various men's signatures, including McDavid's, which was the initial victim mm-hmm. in the story. They were using the stamps to apply for multiple life insurance policies after the bamboozling of the first time they got them. Yeah. First of all, you must have, like, a fucking stamp connect.
Yeah, how are you just gonna make a stamp of people's signatures?
But the best turn in the investigation was when a call was made an hour before Kenneth McDavid was found to a to a towing service a block away. The caller identified themselves as Helen Goulet. The car, a 1999 Mercury Sable station wagon, and it had a front end damage. It was towed to a street near Ruttenschmidt's home, so police go in search of the station wagon. It had been impounded for receiving numerous parking tickets and then resold, when no one came forward to claim it. So they take it in, and it has the damage, but also has blood on the undercarriage.
Oh.
DNA tests were run, and it came back as a match to Kenneth McDavid. DNA experts would later testify that the blood evidence was for sure his and would have to be a 1 in 10 quadrillion chance to be somebody else's.
Mm-hmm.
The car came back for belonging at the time to an Encino woman who, oddly enough, her name was written on a paper found in Goulet's current car. Yeah. The big question is, was she another victim and never even owned the car?
Hmm.
The answer is yes.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So they were taken in and held without bail in federal jail and lost the motion to be released on bail. Obviously, these fucking grannies were going to fucking eat themselves out of the town quick, yeah. Fast, and in a hurry. So July 31st, 2016, both women were charged with 2 counts of murder and the special circumstance of murder for financial gain and multiple murders.
Fuck yeah.
Making them eligible for the death penalty. They also received charges with 2 counts of conspiracy to commit murder for financial gain. I feel like I said that already. The criminal complaint alleged that Goulet had collected $348,000 from Paul Vados' life insurance, which she had 12 policies taken out on him.
Fuck.
And $1.5 million from Kenneth McDavid. That was only Goulet. And Rudderschmidt had collected $246,000 and $674,000. They had 23 policies out on McDavid. Yeah. With the murder charges now in play, the U.S. Attorney's Office dismissed the fraud case. They retained it just in case they were acquitted for murder.
Mm-hmm.
Just gonna keep that in my back pocket.
Yeah, need to charge you again later.
Yeah. In March 2007, they went for a 4-day preliminary hearing, and the two women looked nothing like themselves. They looked ragged as fuck compared to what they were, like, trying to be. Short mm-hmm. skirts, hairs and curlers, high heels, red lipstick, you know, cougars.
Mm-hmm.
But no one felt any sympathy for them at all. Okay, so the processes that they were going through, or the trials that they were going through to basically take care of these men, it's like a huge investment. They have to go and find somebody. They have to, you know, get them to sign all these papers, get all this information from them. So it was like, we don't feel like, you knew what the fuck you were doing. This is like a long-term
thing. You did it calculated as fuck.
Yeah, and they were old women. They didn't have any time to be wasting. Mm-hmm. They didn't have time to wait for these dudes to die naturally. They had to kill them. Mm-hmm. So, the witnesses involved were Hillary Adler, our Encino woman. Her purse was stolen at a Santa Monica health club in 2003. Her ID was used to buy the station wagon, and they found her ID in Rudder Schmidt's home. They didn't believe in throwing anything out.
He's stupid.
Another witness they had involved was Jimmy Covington, who was 48 and was probably their next victim. They already had applications filled out for one policy on him so far. He said that he started to get like real, like they set him up and he moved in and they started to get like real aggressive with him, like demanding his birthday, demanding his social security number. He was like, I'm fucking getting the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
So he left after one day.
Ooh.
Yeah, he was like, some fucking fishy shit's going on.
Yeah.
So, yeah. On October 24, 2007, prosecutors decided to not seek the death penalty because they were old as shit. Mm-hmm. March 18, 2008, fucking a year already, is when the jury was brought in and opening statements began. The creme de la creme of the trial hearings, after PowerPoints, evidence, all that good shit, was a videotaped conversation between the pair, the dynamic duo, arguing about the situation while in jail.
Why would they do that?
I have no idea.
They're clearly not masterminds.
Uh-uh. Rudder Schmidt could be heard complaining about Gulake becoming greedy and taking out an excessive amount of policies. Mm-hmm. She was basically like, they're going to fucking lock your ass up because you got greedy. The women were convicted in L.A., California in April 2008 of conspiracy to murder Paul Vados, Kenneth McDavid, and first-degree murder of Paul Vados. Goulet was convicted of first-degree murder of Kenneth McDavid, and both women were sentenced to consecutive life terms without possibility of parole. Appeals were made but denied on August 18th, 2009. In the first appeal to the court, their first appeal was to the Court of Appeals in California, and it was denied. And then the Cali Supreme Court on October 28th, 2012 also denied their appeal. Currently, they are 89 and 87 years old, and they are serving their sentences in the Central California Women's Facility in Chowchilla, along with some other notorious names that are also in that prison.
Nice.
So they're there.
Nice.
Yep.
Happy ending.
That's the story of the Black Widows.
I saw a TV show recently that had a similar case. That's why it was striking me. I realized it afterwards because I was like, I'm visualizing a lot. But they worked at like a homeless shelter or a rehab center.
I think I know which one you're talking about. These were two old white ladies. I think the one...
They were white ladies on the show. It was a fictional...
Oh, I got my information from True TV, which had basically most of my story. Mm-hmm. And Wikipedia.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right, I got my information from Wikipedia, The Guardian, and independent.co. Nope, sorry, that's the other story. Forgot my stories in reverse. BBC.co.uk, iNews.co.uk, and TheSun.co.uk. So, November 21st, 1983, Linda Mann, 15, was on her way home from babysitting when she decided to follow a shortcut instead of her normal route. From this shortcut, she did not return. Her family came looking for her, organizing a search with her friends and neighbors. They searched through the night, but it was not until the next morning they'd find her too late. She was on a deserted footpath called the Black Pad. She'd been raped and strangled. The only evidence obtained was a semen sample through which they determined the perpetrator to have an enzyme profile matching only 10% of men and having type A blood. 3 years later, on July 31st, 1986, Dawn Ashworth, 15, she left her friend's house in Narborough, Leicestershire at 4:30. She heads to her home in Enderby, which is only a few minutes' walk away, opting to take the 10-pound lane shortcut, which was a footpath, and vanishes on the way. 2 days later, she's found in the corner of a local field covered in twigs, branches, and torn-up nettles. She showed signs of defense, having put up a valiant struggle before what was described by the pathologist as a brutal sexual assault. She was raped and strangled. The investigation was like no other. The police started looking for a serial killer. There are other similarities, such as method, locale. They were found in areas that were a few hundred yards apart. Both girls were 15, and their clothes had been removed in the same way. Both were strangled, not manually, but with their scarves. And they believe that the perp was local and that he might have known Linda Mann. Leicestershire. The Leicestershire Mercury. Leicester Mercury released an article titled Killer in Our Midst with the warning, if we don't catch him, it could be your daughter next. This case got so, it incited so much public fear in everyone because they knew from the Killer in Our Midst case that there was a serial killer. Mm-hmm. So, the police quickly made an arrest. Richard Buckland, 17 years old, out of Narborough with a learning disability. He knew Dawn and they brought him in for interrogation. During the interview, he repeatedly confessed to and then withdrew his confession. He would not confess to doing anything to Linda, but was able to provide details in the Dawn case that no one aside from the police knew. The police knew that they were looking for a serial, which meant he was lying about Linda. He was charged on August 10th and went to court on August 11th. Simultaneously, 5 miles northwest of Narborough at the University of Leicester.
Sorry.
It doesn't have as many letters as the other word, so I don't know how to say it. I'm sorry. Okay. Geneticist Alec Jeffries was running experiments to study genetic illnesses and how they are passed on by extracting DNA from cells, attaching it to photographic film, and leaving it in a photographic developing tank. Upon extraction, the film shows a sequence of bars, and Jeffries discovered that with this, every individual whose cells had been used in the experiment could be identified with great precision, and through the process, you could also identify familial relatives. He, of course, published his findings and was asked to use his research to assist children who were being denied British citizenship due to officials disputing their relationship to their British parents. The police called Alec Jeffries the day after Richard Buckland's appearance in court because they wanted him to prove Buckland killed Dawn and Linda. He would only confess to the one, and they knew it was the same person. He worked on the case overnight and knew two things. They were raped by the same man, and that man wasn't Richard Buckland. The police had him run it 3 times. Buckland was free at the end of it because it was not him. So Buckland was free. They needed to screen more men. They sent letters to every man born between 1953 and 1970 that lived or worked in Narborough, asking them, I can't turn the pages with this hand.
What is wrong with you?
I don't know. I'm ambidextrous. You'd think my hands work good, but they don't. Asking them to submit a blood sample. At first, a lot of people didn't want to do it, but then with the growing public concern and fear, everyone was like, well, I have to do it, because there were people who were like, I don't like needles, I don't like the cops, and they didn't want to do it. But eventually it was like, public pressured them. Like, they either felt the pressure or they were like, I have to do the right thing. I want this case solved. Everyone wanted it solved. So they set up testing centers, and anybody who was tested had to provide identification. They tested 5,511 men in 8 months. No match. They kept looking. One of the men to give a sample was Colin Pitchfork, 27, baker and father of two children who had previously been questioned in the Linda murder, but he had an alibi that night because he was taking care of his infant son. On August 1987, the year after Don's death, a man named Kelly was out with friends at a pub when one of them brought up Colin Pitchfork. Kelly, a workmate of Colin's, confessed he'd impersonated Colin and taken the blood test for him. Colin asked him to do it because Colin said he'd taken the test already for a friend that had priors in indecent exposure. Kelly agreed, and Pitchfork inserted Kelly's photo into his own passport and drove Kelly to the test center. 6 weeks after this confession, one of the group in the pub repeated it to a local officer. They arrested Kelly that day and Colin by the end of the night. The detective read Colin his rights and then asked, why Don Ashworth? That was it. Colin said, after shrugging, opportunity. She was there and I was there.
What a dick.
He confessed to both. He gave a detailed confession. He left his infant son sleeping in his car while he raped and killed Linda Mann.
Oh my God.
He pled guilty in January, and the court got a psychiatric report that stated that Colin had a personality disorder of psychopathic type accompanied by serious psychosexual pathology. They sentenced him to life imprisonment, which is a minimum of 30 years. And they basically said the way that he had committed the acts, he would do them again.
Yeah.
They said as long as he had this psychosexual pathology, he was not going to stop doing this. That is the story of Colin Pitchfork, the first man ever convicted through DNA printing. On June 2021, he was deemed no longer, because it was 30 years, on June 2021, last month, he was deemed no longer a danger to the public, and they've decided to release him.
2021?
Yes, last month.
Oh my God.
He is 60 something, so he's not even old.
Wow.
Yeah, but they're like, he has been a model prisoner, best behavior. And one of the mothers, I think Don Ashworth's mother, because a lot of the family submitted quotes, she was like, you say he has great behavior, but remember that he's a child rapist, so mm-hmm. he's a well-behaved child rapist.
Yeah,
like, don't just say he's a well-behaved prisoner.
Mm-hmm.
The uncle was like, oh, this is like telling them that there's no repercussions, you'll get out, you're free. A lot of people are like,
just be good.
Yeah.
Like, that's fucking bullshit.
Yeah. One of the moms was like, I hate that he's getting out, but he can't hurt me anymore. And, yeah, just the general public feeling is like, they believe in, like, prison as a rehabilitation, but they were like,
mm-hmm.
you know. How rehabilitated could you be?
Yeah.
Given your psyche, and everything.
That's what that sounds yeah. like.
You served your minimum 30 years. Correct. But he was denied parole for the, like, 6 years upcoming to it.
Hmm.
Like, he could have gotten parole, but they kept denying it.
But they're gonna let him out now?
Mm-hmm.
That's bullshit.
And his sister. I believe it was either Linda... I think it was Don's sister, had even spoken about it, and she was like, I don't ever want him to be free. Like, he's just going to do it again. And that was her vibe. She was like, he's just going to keep doing it. 61 is not that old, you guys.
No.
There's so many prominent actors that are way in their 60s. Fucking, I think Jeffrey Dean Morgan, isn't he like 60 now?
Oh, I have no idea.
He could be like 50.
The point is, yeah, you're 60 is just a fucking age.
Yeah.
Especially, like, the new 60. Like,
yes.
Now it's, you can't even tell half the time.
Yes.
Like, mm-mm.
I would be the only time, I would believe it if you were, like, over 85. Well, they're 85 now. I'd be like, well, let me see a picture, though. Because are they a buff 85-year-old that's been fucking eating his greens in there?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Because not everybody gets that weak with age. Some people are fueled by
hate. Especially if you were in prison.
Yeah.
Chances are you weren't sitting around.
No. No. Oh, my shoulder. So that's Colin Pitchfork.
That's crazy.
Yeah. It's time, at the end of the episode, for us to give you our clue for episode 100. We've already submitted two clues the two previous weeks, so make sure you listen to those episodes to hear what they are. And again, the first person to guess will get a shout-out and the first ever piece of public Gumshoe Weekly merchandise.
Yes.
We won't tell you what it is. You will receive it, though. You will need to... Your best bet's going to be to email us so that we can contact you easily, but you could do it on Instagram. Anything where it's easy to contact you back. Because if you don't contact us back, it's going to be the second person. Okay, so our clue this week is...
Pineapple.
That's all you get. Mm-hmm. If you'd like to see photos or anything... Why can't I do this anymore?
Why do you always do this?
It's just the last two episodes. Then you can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at
Gumshoe Weekly.
If you want to see videos of us about our particular brand, our podcast, etc., you can find that on TikTok at
Gumshoe Weekly Pod.
And if you would like to email us questions or guesses, email us at
gumshoeweekly@gmail.com.
That's all, folks.